Yesterday's shooting at the Washington Navy Yard left 13 dead, including the gunman.
It marks the 20th mass killing in the United States since President Obama took office. In total, 174 people have been killed since January 2009.
Despite these figures, our next guest says we shouldn't expect any new gun restrictions anytime soon.
Philip Bump joins us to outline why that is. He's a writer for the Atlantic Wire, and his latest article is Diminishing Returns: Why the D.C. Shooting Won't Lead to New Gun Laws. And just so you know, we've linked to that on the Central Time Facebook page. Philip, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you very much.
After yesterday's tragedy, you know, lawmakers might find it to be a good time. I think lawmakers or people who certainly are in favor of gun control would probably find it a good time to renew the call for gun reform. But Obama, for example, didn't bring it up in his remarks yesterday. Why not?
I think that Congress had learned a very severe lesson when they tried to do this in the wake of the Newtown massacre last December. As I'm sure everyone remembers, over the course of this spring, the Senate tried to pass a package of bills that would apply some limited form of gun control and also other measures, you know, background checks and so on and so forth, and it was unable to do so. The Senate, of course, being the more liberal body on Capitol Hill. And I think that if this incident had occurred outside of the context of that recent effort and outside of the context of Newtown, there would be a stronger push. And, you know, we've seen today some small mentions of trying to do something. But in that context, I think that it's essentially a non-starter.
Speaking of Newtown, yesterday Fox News commentator Britt Hume had this to say about the shooting.
I think a lot of the usual suspects have gone to battle stations, as they always do, over gun control or the lack of it or whatever, but and that's going to happen, but it doesn't mean very much at this stage. It's hard to believe that after what happened in Newtown, nothing came of it in Congress, much on that issue is going to come of this.
First, how significant is it that nothing came of the shooting in Newtown, as he put it?
I think it's tremendously significant. I mean, I think that, you know, there were a number of factors about Newtown that made it more shocking than a lot of these other incidents. And you pointed out the fact that, you know, there have been more such mass killings under Obama than under any other recent president, according to data compiled by Mother Jones Magazine. And, you know, that suggests that these things have become sort of routine. Newtown broke us out of that routine. It was the murder in an elementary school of small children, and it was absolutely stunning. And I think everyone remembers that. But even in the wake of that, there was complete paralysis on Capitol Hill. Yesterday's event, which involved a man with apparent mental health problems, as the news report just suggested, who was attacking people in a workplace, which we've seen before, it is a routine incident in a pattern of routines that makes it far less likely that there will be the same sort of energy that comes out of the response.
You talk about paralysis in Congress. Where does the paralysis come from?
Well, the paralysis is not specific to gun control, of course. This is, according to information, or according to, I believe it's Open Government, the website that tracks the number of bills that have happened over the course of each Congress. This has been the least productive Congress to date of any Congress in recent memory. So the paralysis exists outside of the context of gun control, and that's many people assume that is a function of the fact that Congress has grown more partisan. Gun control was, especially with a president that was coming off a re-election that he won handily, it was expected that, you know, maybe gun control could be a sort of thing that people rallied around, and they just rallied against it.
So speaking of folks who did rally around it to some extent, certainly in the state level, two Democratic state legislators in Colorado recently lost their seats in recall elections, partly over the issue of gun control in that state. Do you think other politicians have their eye on the Colorado, what's happening in Colorado? And is that a warning signal for them?
Oh, there's no question about it. The NRA, which is always a very smart political actor, was tremendously smart in the way that they focused on taking out these legislators in Colorado. And, you know, that was 1 week ago today that two legislators who took a risky vote in a Democratic but not overwhelmingly Democratic state legislature lost their jobs because of the vote they took on gun control. And for elected officials who always need to have some sort of political cover to make the decisions that they do, either coming from, you know, mass popular support or from, you know, having peers on their body that also vote the same way they do, it makes it much harder for legislators, I think probably at every level of government, to feel bold about taking action on gun control, knowing that pushing for gun control measures has not been successful. But when you are successful, there is a real political cost.
Now, when we talk about Colorado and what happened there with the recalls, was it just, you know, Coloradoans involved in this? Were there outside groups? Did they come in? Did other outside groups see these recall elections as an opportunity, or is this just playing out in Colorado?
No, I mean, this became a national issue. You know, Mayor Michael Bloomberg of New York, who has an organization called Mayors Against Illegal Guns, which has put a new emphasis on gun control measures, put a lot of money into the race, as did a number of other external organizations. The NRA actually put in less, if I'm remembering correctly, right about the same amount as did Bloomberg's group. But the NRA had something that they didn't, which was on-the-ground organizing. There are a lot of NRA members all across the country, and you know what the Denver Post, as it was giving its story on what was happening in the election on the day of the election, used as its header image a man who was, you know, holding up a big sign saying, you know, vote no on these legislators, essentially. And it mentioned as an aside that he was an NRA member. So they had people they could count on to actually do some of that field work. And for them, they probably didn't need to spend a lot of money anyway.
So Michael Bloomberg is a big city mayor. And a lot of the folks involved in gun control issues are, you know, from larger cities. Do you think this debate over gun control and frankly, the lack of gun control since Sandy Hook, do you think that can be at least partly explained by this growing rural urban divide?
It's a good question. And honestly, I don't know off the top of my head. I'd have to look at data in order to be able to say with certainty. But, you know, I mean, I think that there is a divide in the national legislature, which is reflected along partisan lines, but, you know, also mirrors a number of other trends, such as the fact that, you know, there is growing diversity in America and that people of color tend to vote more Democratic, that there is, you know, an increased split. You know, there are more people living in cities than before. That also tends to indicate particular demography and political associations. And so there is this increasing bifurcation in Congress, and I think it is as much a reflection of that as anything.
Coincidentally, Senator Dick Durbin was set to have a hearing today examining stand your ground laws, which have been very controversial. What did his decision to postpone that hearing suggest to you? What did it say to you?
Stand your ground is interesting because, I mean, everyone became familiar with stand your ground, obviously, in the wake of the Trayvon Martin case in Florida, and the idea that people should be empowered to act with deadly force if they feel as though their lives are threatened. If, you know, the hearing went forward, obviously it's difficult to have a conversation about a subcomponent of, you know, gun laws at the same time that people are still literally cleaning up a crime scene several miles away. I think it was a tricky moment to have that conversation, but there was definitely some frustration expressed by people who were coming to Washington to testify on this issue, who felt as though there was little that could be more ironic than having a hearing about addressing gun violence be postponed because of gun violence.
I mean, Congress presumably is elected by the people. You know, that we're the source of the power in Congress. Is the American public, the voting public, becoming too desensitized to the issue of gun violence, you know, as a result of all these shootings?
I mean, the word "too" there obviously is subjective depending on how you feel about gun control measures. But I think it is clearly the case that Americans are less outraged by, you know, what is now run-of-the-mill gun violence than they were at one point in time. You know, I mean, the fact that, yesterday's violence, which obviously got a lot of media attention, still doesn't seem to have had the same sort of saturation as something like Newtown, which, as I said before, you know, had some unique characteristics which made it something that was truly deeply shocking. The fact that a man can walk into a naval base and you just don't see that same level of shock, I think is remarkable, and I think is something that people who are advocating for gun control measures obviously would feel somewhat nervous about.
We're talking with Philip Bump about his article in the Atlantic Wire, Diminishing Returns, Why the D.C. Shooting Won't Lead to New Gun Laws.
And we invite you to join the conversation. Do you agree with Philip, or do you think we might be at a tipping point? Are you concerned that events like this might be desensitizing us to gun violence? Call 1-800-642-1234.
And this is Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Noah Ovshinsky.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're talking with Philip Bump, a writer for the Atlantic Wire, about why he thinks yesterday's Naval Yard shooting won't lead to new gun legislation.
And we invite you to join the conversation. Are new gun laws the solution to the problem of mass shootings in the United States? If not, what should the solution be? Let us know at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can also leave us a comment on the Central Time Facebook page. So returning to our conversation, Philip, I want to talk a little bit about Congress. I want to return to Congress. And based on your reporting and what you know, what would need to change? Not what needs to change, but what would need to change in order for there to be some kind of reform of any kind in today's Congress, whether we're talking about gun control, the farm bill, the deficit, you name it.
I mean, politics is the act of representing constituencies, and there are, you know, I mean, there are a majority of Republicans in Congress, or in the House, rather, that has a certain set of priorities. There's a majority of Democrats in the Senate that has a different set of priorities. Those sets of priorities are increasingly divergent, and I think that for either side to want to see some sort of change, you know, either both sides need to be willing to compromise, or the voters need to change their elected representatives. You know, I mean, I think that the overwhelming evidence that exists out there is that the Republican Party has been more obstinate in sticking to its goals of what it wants to achieve. You know, it is set to embark on its 41st straight attempt to defund or otherwise undermine the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare, which is, you know, they've held a number of votes this year, even while things such as funding the government have fallen by the wayside. So, you know, I mean, the problem, such as it is that there is a group of elected officials, and this is how they are acting, and that, you know, the nature of democracy is that if you don't like that, then you change your elected officials.
We're going to go to the phones now, and we invite you to join the conversation. You know, are new gun laws the solution to the problem of mass shootings? Should something be done? John in Rib Lake, what do you think?
Well, follow up to the comment just made by the guest with regard to, you know, changing our legislators. I think that, be it with regard to guns or really anything with our government, the general public, I think, seems to just have become so apathetic. And I think the reason for that is we seem powerless because no matter who we put into these offices, they're controlled by people who have a whole bunch of money, and therefore they're going to be, the legislators are beholden to them, and not to us as the voters, the electorate. And so, until the money is out of the question, I see no solution.
Philip, what role do you see money in playing all this? Obviously, there's been changes due to recent Supreme Court rulings that have allowed more money and different kinds of money into our election system. What role does money play in the paralysis?
It's a great point, and I think one that tends to be oversimplified, and I don't mean to be disparaging in saying that, but you know, the way that lobbyists and organizations use money is not quite the direct sort of patronage that is generally interpreted. You know, the people buy access to fundraisers, people buy access to meetings and build actual personal relationships with elected officials that allows them then to have their viewpoint heard. You know, one of the challenges that people who advocate for, you know, working class folks have is that it is harder for them to get that sort of access. And so, you know, if you are, for example, an environmental group and you want to present your case to an elected official, you know, the odds are good that Exxon has been able to get a lot more meetings than you have just by virtue of that sort of relationship. You know, this is obviously, I'm painting with a very, very broad brush there, but I think that the relationship is not quite as tight as people suggest that it is. Regardless, you know, I mean, the fact that elected officials have a lot of decisions to make on a lot of different things and hear some voices more loudly than others is itself obviously a problem.
Yeah. Going back to the phones, Paul from Elkhorn, what do you think?
Well, all the mass shootings that have occurred recently, as a matter of fact, pretty much all the mass shootings in the early 70s, have occurred in what's quote unquote been the gun-free zones. So no one, a bad guy is not dumb enough to go into a place where he knows heavily armed people are going to be able to defend themselves and open fire. I mean, that's what happened at Newtown and what happened at Aurora, and that's what happened at the naval base. The only people that were armed were the security guards, and they took 7 minutes to respond. So, I mean, and in addition, gun violence has actually gone down in the last 20 years. It's just that we've sensationalized these isolated cases, even though it's been three times in the last year, it's these isolated cases of quote-unquote mass murder. And all of these cases have also been mental health-related. So that's mm-hmm. the issue, in my mind, not the guns.
So, Paul, obviously, you know, we've been talking about the paralysis in Congress and the inability of Congress to come up with really any comprehensive direction towards gun control. Do you think Congress is on the right track?
No, I think they're not on the right track. I think they should relax the gun laws because we have 20,000 gun laws in this country. And as shown as in Milwaukee, they plea bargain gun crimes down to littering or jaywalking. So they aren't enforcing the ones they have in effect today. So, I mean, additional laws, if they're not enforced, and additional laws, if they're not well thought out, do no good.
And Philip, you know, we've heard from several Wisconsinites here from really across the state, and obviously they represent a variety of viewpoints. Looking outside our borders for a second, the Washington Post recently noted that, you know, foreigners say they are no longer surprised at U.S. gun violence. What does that say about our image?
Well, I mean, honestly, I don't think it says much about our image that we're not already familiar with. I mean, we've been the land of cowboys for a long time. But I do want to go back to some of the points that the last caller made, because quite honestly, some of the things that he said are factually inaccurate. It is not everyone who commits one of these crimes that has a mental health problem, for example. I mean, obviously you can judge for yourself the mental health of someone who decides to murder a bunch of people, but in terms of diagnosed actual mental health afflictions, it is, I think, something like two-thirds of the ones have demonstrated something like that prior to the actual act. Also, this recurring idea that these only happen in gun-free zones is also incorrect. You know, Jared Loughner, who shot Gabby Giffords in Tucson, Arizona, did this outside of a grocery store. You know, I mean, there are any number of examples. There was a shooting that happened at an apartment complex in Washington State. There was a shooting that happened at a nail salon in Georgia. I mean, these things happen all over the place all the time, not just in these "I know no one there is going to have a gun" areas. And it's a common talking point. It's a false talking point, and I think it's worth addressing.
I want to, Philip, I just want to ask you one last question. Putting your hands on the crystal ball for a second, do you see the paralysis continuing in Washington?
Yeah, I mean, categorically, yes. I mean, you know, there is at this point, particularly given the fact that you know, as I say in the article, President Obama is about as politically weak as he's been since he took office, if not the politically weakest, particularly in the aftermath of the Syria vote, or the call for a Syria vote, and that has empowered his opponents both in the Republican Party and in the Democratic Party. And I think that for the short term, this is going to be the case. There was a member of Congress that spoke with the Washington Post, I believe it was yesterday, who said that he'd never seen both sides of the aisle being so leaderless, both the Democrats from Barack Obama and the fact that the Republicans are so willing to stand up to John Boehner in the House, you know, and that portends ongoing inability to get stuff done.
Well, we'll leave it there. Philip, thanks for being with us today.
Of course, my pleasure.
Philip Bump is a writer for the Atlantic Wire. His article, Diminishing Returns, Why the D.C. Shooting Won't Lead to New Gun Laws, is linked on the Central Time website and Facebook page.